This is Xu Divin. Xu's a recent homeowner, but he says paying his mortgage and credit card debt takes up over 90% of his income. His story is shocking, but it's not uncommon in Xiamen. This is the country's most indebted city, where household debt is almost 100% of the city's GDP. That extreme household debt means locals are avoiding spending money on almost anything else.
KitKat won't be getting a break from the European Court of Justice, which ruled on Wednesday that Nestlé cannot trademark the classic chocolate bar's famous shape. And Nestlé has been fighting for more than a decade to stop other chocolate makers using the same shape. But the court ruled it wasn't distinctive enough to warrant protection in Europe, though it is protected in Australia, Canada and South Africa.
It took less than a day for Facebook's dream of finally entering China to get a wake-up call, Beijing style. A check Wednesday of a Chinese government database that had granted registration for a Facebook subsidiary in the city of Hangzhou, previously seen and reported on just hours before, showed the registration had disappeared. The approval was supposed to grant Facebook permission to create a so-called innovation hub to support local startups.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Thursday. It is July 26th. Thanks for being here with us for another edition of The Opening Bell and another business day getting underway. On the broadcast today, it's Thought Leader Thursday. And Greg Warsick will be here from Associated Bank, conversation about commercial real estate and some new trends and even a new development. The Lincoln Yards development, we'll talk about how things are going and some data points, too, where real estate is concerned, commercial real estate is concerned. Greg will be in our first slot this morning, coming up in just a few seconds. And then later in the program, Mark Lawrence will be here. He's the founder and CEO of Spot Hero. They're getting ready for autonomous vehicles there, and the company is picking some of its favorite parking spots. He's picking some of his favorite parking spots specifically. We're going to have Mark Lawrence on at about 5:40 this morning here in the Opening Bell, so stay tuned for that. But first, on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, here are the numbers. Futures are pointing toward a mixed open on Wall Street later this morning. Dow futures are up about 55 points. That's good for about 0.25%. S&P and NASDAQ futures, though, are lower, and NASDAQ futures are off by almost 0.75%, down about 60 points, 74.10, looking for a rough open there after tough earnings yesterday for Facebook. Some of those tech stocks getting hit. We'll have more on Facebook in just a second. In Europe, the FTSE is lower, but everything else is higher. The DAX and the CAC up almost a percent to a little bit more than a percent. And in Asia, markets are going to end the day generally lower. The Nikkei off about 0.25%. The Hang Seng down 139 points. That's about 0.5%. And the Shanghai down about 0.75%, down about 21 points. Oil is at $69.28 a barrel, which is down just about 2 cents. Facebook yesterday in its earnings report said it failed to add North American daily active users and lost European daily active users in the second quarter amid data leaks, privacy changes, and fake news scandals. In its second quarter earnings report, Facebook said North American daily active users remained at 185 million, the same as the prior quarter. Analysts were expecting a little bit of an increase there, but not much at all. Again, global privacy concerns eating away. Facebook shares this morning down nearly 18%. So it's going to be another rough day for Facebook on Wall Street. One of the other stories that we're watching this morning is hope for a new Alzheimer's drug, hopes rising for a drug to alter the course of the disease. After several repeated failures, two drug companies say that an experimental therapy they're developing slowed mental decline by 30% in patients who got the highest dose. It also removed much of the sticky plaque gumming up their brains. The new drug is called BAN2401 from Issei and Biogen. It failed to help in a study of about 856 people with early Alzheimer's, but those who got the highest of five doses for 18 months declined less than those given dummy treatments. The results were released yesterday here in Chicago, at the Alzheimer's conference. And Homeland Security officials say that Russian hackers who penetrated hundreds of U.S. utilities, manufacturing plants, and other facilities last year gained access by using the most conventional of phishing tools. Officials say the hackers could have caused blackouts but chose not to, and there was no threat to the grid of it going down. The victims included vendors that had links to nuclear plants and even the full electrical grid. Officials gave the briefing yesterday for businesses on how the breach worked in an effort to prevent it from happening again. The newly disclosed details come amid growing concerns over Russia efforts to interfere in midterm elections here in the United States. It's Thought Leader Thursday here on The Opening Bell. We do that every Thursday, and we have a thought leader, a new thought leader every week from Associated Bank. Today, Greg Worsak is here. He's the SVP and Senior Regional Manager for the Chicago market for commercial real estate at Associated Bank. Greg, good morning. Welcome back to The Opening Bell.
Thanks, Steve. Great to be back.
I'd like to start with some developing news. Over the last couple of weeks, we've been hearing about this development in Lincoln Yards, is what it's going to be called. Some of the buildings there as tall as 800 feet. There's going to be a soccer stadium and other things. This is a pretty big deal. I know we don't want to get into the weeds on it, but I'd like your opinion about it.
You know, I think it's probably one of the most notable projects in Chicago that people are monitoring pretty closely, because it's, you know, whether they get Amazon there or not, I think it's kind of a game changer in terms of, you know, infill development of scale. And I think it's going to draw a lot of interest from tenants and people that want to live there.
The fact that you bring up Amazon is important. I've been following they had a public meeting about this recently, and that's, we're not hearing a lot about Amazon anymore. It seems that's sort of fallen off the headline, but that's an interesting point that you've made.
Everybody's, you know, they're still monitoring the Amazon situation. I think, you know, a lot of people are speculating at which cities are the front runners. I think Chicago continues to get mentioned in the, you know, being in the top three, top five. But certainly this site is one of several in Chicago that are appealing and would be a great fit for them. And I think Sterling Bay continues to position that project well in terms of some of the things that they're doing with design.
It's going to be interesting to follow. We'll talk more about this, I'm guessing, going forward, and if it comes to fruition. But you kind of move the city. You talk about these big buildings. You move it further north. That's pretty exciting. It's because you're kind of expanding the city footprint.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's no coincidence that a lot of the growth in the city is along the river. It's going south. It's going north up into this area. And I think you're going to continue to see that growth kind of work its way up. And this site is pretty cool. If you can figure out the transportation, and now you've got a soccer arena, a lot of different venues that I think will be pretty attractive to, you know, tenants and people in terms of a great location to live and work.
One of the other big stories is the boon in office sales in 2018. This just sort of jumps off the page at you when you see this. So far this year, $3.3 billion. For last year, the whole year was $3.1 billion. That's a good year so far, and there's still months to go.
Yeah, I look at those statistics and I sometimes scratch my head because, you know, it kind of ebbs and flows, and I'm not sure how big of an indicator of the strength of the real estate market that really is, because it's really about supply and demand. You never know when investors are going to put office buildings on the market and say, okay, we're done with our hold period, it's time to exit. Mm-hmm. So, you know, is that an indicator? I think it is, to the extent that things are trading once they hit the market. There's plenty of buyers out there. There's a lot of capital. So I think it's another indicator that the commercial real estate industry in terms of investment sale market is still very healthy. But you just never know when banks, when landlords are going to say it's time to exit.
Right. And part of, I think, what you're saying is that pushing these numbers up are a couple of the big deals that have gone through. Sterling Bay, one of them, one of their deals was, $600 to $80 million?
Yes.
So that pushes that total up.
Absolutely. And, you know, who would have known that 600, was Chicago was going to go on the market, or even Prue or some of the, you know, John Hancock. These are big spaces mm-hmm. that hit the market, and they hit all at once, and there's a lot of activity. There's a lot of capital, like I said, in the market. So there's certainly plenty of buyers that are interested.
Am I hearing you say also that you would have better feelings about the health of the market if there were a lot of smaller deals happening? or no?
You know, some of these bigger ones actually, like you said, drive these big numbers. But I keep getting back to the whole supply piece here. It's most of the investors get into these buildings. They have some horizon of investment that they want to be in them 3, 5, 7 years. It could be a fund. It could be private money. Sometimes it's long-term investors that never want to sell. So you just never know what properties are going to hit in any given year that's going to create that surge, that ebb and flow in the market.
Well, one of the other indicators of how well things are going, perhaps, is the office vacancy rates. Those seem to be dropping, especially in the city center, indicating that the downtown area is at least doing pretty well.
Yeah, the new developments for sure are leasing up really, really well, and I think that's location-driven, you know, great design, very efficient layout that you can achieve with new construction. I have to be honest with you, I'm a little surprised that the vacancy is going down because a lot of the tenants moving into those new buildings are, you know, more central CBD in Chicago, and I had some concerns that space was going to be backfilled because a lot of it's tired, needs a lot of capital improvement, tenant improvements, to attract new tenants. Mm. So that's a good sign.
The figures I saw, the city center vacancy rate 4.4%, the metro area 6.4% vacancy rate through the first half of 2018. How would those compare to other years?
Definitely down quite a bit. I mean, those are pretty significant improvements, reductions, and you like to see that. It's a great trend.
Are you seeing any movement in those? You mentioned just then some of these areas need some of these capital improvements. Are you seeing any move to do any of that in any of these locations? Any plans in the works?
We haven't seen any, but that's not to say that it isn't occurring. I think a lot of people with some of the space tend to like to try to find the tenants with the promise of doing the work once they find the tenant that's willing to do it, you know, so they have renderings. They have, if you sign, here's the things that we're committed to doing, but it's on a speculative basis to go in and put in several million dollars in capital improvements, and some TI. It's, I'm not sure people at this point in the cycle are willing to take that risk.
The story that we found on vacancy suggested that the suburban vacancy rates have improved, but didn't give any firm numbers on that. What are you seeing in the suburbs? Are you hearing anything in the suburbs?
So on the retail, that was specifically, I think, that was alluding to, and I'll be honest with you, that was a bit surprising to me, too. They were specifically retail vacancy rates. And, you know, with the recent announcement of Toys R Us and Fresh Market and some other retailers continuing to shutter stores, the fact that overall vacancy retail in the suburbs went down was in the second quarter of this year was surprising to me.
I think the number that they said was, 7% was the vacancy rate in the suburbs. That seemed pretty good.
It's really good. Yeah. And, you know, to me, I personally believe this whole e-commerce, you know, everybody getting themselves worked up that it's the end of retail is overblown. I think it's just another mechanism for retailers that are creative and understand their business to deliver to the consumers. I don't think brick and mortar are going away.
Funny you should say that, because we have found an article from Real Estate Journals, the 6 commercial real estate myths debunked. And guess what? That's number one. Brick and mortar retail is being replaced by e-commerce. They don't believe it either.
No, I don't. It's it makes for great press. You know, it was fun to talk about it and say it's the demise of retail. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's department stores, apparel, things of that nature are the ones that are really struggling, or those retailers that haven't adjusted their business plan to the changes in the market are going to go away. And that happens every year. That's not new. But I think there's a lot of great examples of where e-commerce can supplement bricks and mortar. For example, you know, if you go to Nordstrom's you buy certain things. There's certain things that you know that you can just go online and buy, mm-hmm. but other things you might want to go there to try on.
Yeah, and I saw a really cool article recently that says that the brick and mortar retailers are getting hip to this now. And so what's going to happen going forward is you go into, let's say, a Nordstrom, and you have that online experience right there. So they may not have the inventory that you need, but you go in and there's sort of this, you know, however technically they do it, where you find what you need, order it online, it shipped to your home.
Yeah, and I think that's a trend that's going to continue. Restoration Hardware has done a great job of executing that model. They've closed a lot of stores and created really these shopping experiences. We have one in River North where they have everything on display. You can sort of see what it looks like. There's a place to get, you know, a glass of wine as you're shopping. You can eat there. And it's been a tremendous success. And you pick out what you want and it gets shipped to you.
I know that this article specifically talks about the Magnificent Mile, but there are all places all over the city and the suburbs where this sort of revitalization is happening.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Let's talk about one of these other myths, because I am surprised by this. I hadn't heard this, but some people have been saying that foreign investors were perhaps souring on commercial real estate in the U.S. We've had this conversation before, and I've not heard that till I saw this article. And you probably don't believe this either.
I don't. Yeah. In Chicago and really on the coast, you can continue to see significant investment in commercial real estate by foreign investors, and it may not always be direct. It oftentimes will come through advisory funds and things of that nature. But the reality is that myth is coming because of all the press that's coming around China wanting to pull back. They're coming down on some of the companies to divest and cut back on their foreign investment. The reality is that there are a significant number of foreign investors besides China, so they're not the only one. And so I think that's where that myth came from, is just the press around China.
Yeah, and one of the other myths, too, is, and this goes back to our conversation earlier, that the suburban office locations are no longer desirable. I mean, the data that we just talked about sort of disproves that as well.
Yeah, there's, you know, suburban office, you know, there's still higher vacancy than downtown. Location is key, being in the right submarket. Access to transportation, especially coming out of the city, is a big deal. For example, I would say Rosemont is probably one of the stronger suburban office submarkets, largely because you have the Blue Line that can bring millennials out of the city. So there's, you know, it's there's still a lot of companies that want to be in the suburbs. But again, you read the press, and it's announcements every week, every month about another company moving downtown from the suburbs.
One of the other myths, too, and we've talked a lot about millennials on our thought leader conversations, is that they're going to be the future of demand for multi-housing. What are your thoughts on that?
They're certainly going to be a big chunk. There definitely seems to be an aversion to ownership by this segment of our population, but our experience from financing new apartments around Chicago is that there is a surprising surge from empty nesters. You know, instead of downsizing into a condo or a smaller home, we're seeing a lot of empty nesters sell their home, take the money off the table and rent, and maybe use some of that money to buy a house in Florida or Arizona, or buy a bigger home in those markets and maintain flexibility as empty nesters, as renters. You know, it's less capital investment, less work, less hassle. You turn the key and you leave. And a lot of them aren't sure where their kids are going to land, so that gives them the flexibility to go wherever they want.
Yeah, those empty nesters, are they downsizing when they do that? Are they?
They're downsizing, but what we tend to see is they are the ones that like to rent the 2 and 3 bedrooms, and the millennials like to rent the studios and 1 bedroom, so it's kind of a nice mix.
Yeah, the concern about the millennials has always been the student debt, the overwhelming student debt that they have, and sort of trying to get their financial footing.
It's a real issue. I mean, the statistics for each graduating class that we're tracking, it continues to rise at a pretty exponential rate, and it is impacting their ability really to apply for home ownership.
Every time you're here, I always ask you the question, and we mentioned Amazon earlier. Do you know anything that we don't know that you can? Any secret information?
I don't. I wish I did, yeah. But it's definitely a hot topic that everybody likes to talk about. I really hope Chicago gets it.
Greg, always good chatting with you. We'll see you again next time.
You too, Steve. Thanks.
Greg Worsink is a Senior Vice President and Senior Regional Manager for the Chicago Market for Commercial Real Estate at Associated Bank. It's our Thought Leader Conversation that we do every Thursday. You can listen to past conversations at WGNRadio.com on the opening bell page. Follow Associated Bank at Associated Biz on Twitter. And also head over to AssociatedBank.com/thought leadership to learn more about our thought leaders and hear even more conversations there. This is the opening bell on 720 WGN.
Hi, this is Jim Dahlke with today's Inno Minute on WGN Radio, a rundown of all the Chicago innovation and tech news you need to know, delivered by ChicagoInno.com. Chicago-based Grubhub has acquired Boston-based mobile payment platform Level Up for $390 million in an all-cash deal. Level Up, founded in 2008, helps restaurants accept mobile orders and provide mobile loyalty programs. And Austin startup Goat is allowing Chicagoans, or just about anyone, to buy a fleet of dockless electric scooters and rent them out through its app. Owners are responsible for getting proper permits for whatever city they operate in, and Goat says scooter owners can make up to $88,000 a year in revenue with their scooter fleet. That's today's Inno Minute on WGN Radio. Learn more at ChicagoInno.com and sign up for The Beat, our daily email newsletter.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is the opening bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning again, everybody. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here with us on our Thursday edition of the opening bell. I saw a headline recently, just a couple days ago, as a matter of fact, in the Chicago Tribune. Spot Hero is getting parking garages ready for driverless cars. And that sort of sparked us to ask more questions about this. And we thought, well, who better to go to than to the founder and CEO of Spot Hero, Mark Lawrence, who is with us this morning. Mark, good morning. Welcome to the opening bell.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
This headline jumped off, as I mentioned, because I guess maybe people will ask this question. If we have all these autonomous cars running around, why do they need to park?
Great question, Steve. Well, because cars are not going to be needing to be driving around constantly because they're not used constantly. They're going to need to be stopped so they can be charged, cleaned, and the like. And the biggest thing is the wear and tear on the vehicles. When they're not being used, they're not going to be driving around empty.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense because it's not like these cars are just going to pull off to the side of the road and rest for a little while. You're right, they do need a place to go. So how are you getting these garages ready for this?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. There needs to be some organization. There can't just be a disarray of cars that just will pull over to the side of the road or causing even more congestion and traffic. There needs to be an organization, and there's parking garages and parking lots that actually have space for these when they're not being used. And this is when human drivers use them, there's parking now. So we identified a need for when autonomous vehicles are here, that they could need to be able to get in and out of a parking location. And that's the technology that we're focused on so that we can be ready for an autonomous future.
Yeah, I mean, because even for a good driver, sometimes it's difficult for a human driver to get in and out of these garages. What are you envisioning here has to change for this to be easier for an autonomous vehicle to do this?
This is a great question, Steve. What we're envisioning is a single place where a car can communicate with technology to know, is there a space available and can I park? And what's awesome is this is actually not just making improvements for the experience for when autonomous vehicles are here, but this actually works today. So humans have the same problem. Where am I going to park and how much am I going to pay? Nobody loves parking. Nobody gets up and says, I'm super excited about this. But what they need to know is, where am I going to park and how much am I going to pay? And so the same technology that we're building for autonomous vehicles to understand that, people can use today in the Spot Hero app.
Yeah, and that's what you do every day for humans. How is that going? How's life at Spot Hero these days?
I would say life at Spot Hero these days is pretty good. We've been doing this a while. I started this in Chicago about 8 years ago to make parking easier for drivers. And you can reserve a parking spot, you know exactly where you're going to park and how much you're going to pay. And this same thing that works for human drivers will also work for autonomous driving as well.
Yeah, I know so many people that now use Spot Hero, and it's just they can't even think about going back to the time where they would just come here downtown, for instance, and hope that there was a spot at the garage where they parked. It's nice having that firmness in their schedule, isn't it?
It's nice today, and we don't want it to just be ready for today. We want it to be ready for tomorrow, which is why we're focused on getting these experience and the technology so that when autonomous vehicles are here, that they can park.
And this seems like a no-brainer, too, for the garages, because if you think, you know, if they want to stay with the times, this is something they pretty much have to do in terms of integrating all of this technology, isn't it?
I would say that there's a large, a lot of different types of garages, and they need to be ready for tomorrow. And there's some parking companies that really understand this and have made those investments, and they're really focused on it, and others aren't. But this is super important for future-proofing those garages so they can be ready for parking for tomorrow.
And why are those? What is stopping those other garages? Is it just that the leadership doesn't get it, or they're not thinking forwardly?
I think ultimately they'll understand why it's important. And I think the biggest thing is to understand that parking is necessary. You'd mentioned how cars are going to drive around, and a lot of people do mention this, but the reality is we don't have a cell phone that is playing video constantly all night. The wear and tear on the vehicles would just be too much. And there's so much congestion as is today that there needs to be a real understanding and a focus on how to solve that for tomorrow. So cars aren't going to be driving around magically empty, creating wear and tear on the streets and the cars themselves. There's going to need to be a solution for traffic, congestion, and for parking in order to actually have livable cities where people can move around amongst them.
You might get this pushback in your daily life, but people will say that there will be a lot of areas that you won't need parking anymore. So will the volume of parking come down? I mean, it has to in some ways, doesn't it?
So this comes up a lot where the end of parking is going away. But the reality is that we're going to need to have the number of cars that are available for peak usage for rush hour when most people move. And they're going to need to be stored when they're not being used. And so while parking might change, it's not going away. And it is a necessary part of the future of mobility for human drivers and autonomous drivers. And we've got tons of parking. It just needs to change how it's being used.
We had a conversation recently, a couple of different aspects of this. We talked to people who are building the airports for the future, and also some of these folks who were dealing with the autonomous part of this. But the airports, especially, they're not building any parking anymore. They're lessening the parking at airports because Uber and all of these other services exist today. How is that going to impact you if places start reducing parking?
There will definitely be different types of parking segments that are affected by the changing nature of mobility, like Uber and Lyft. But that doesn't mean it's going away completely. And while it might be affected at airports and other segments, there are huge segments that have really not been affected. And regardless of the segment or how it's being affected, the way that works with us is how can we make it so that a car, whether there's a human driver or an autonomous driver, knows exactly where to park and how much it's going to pay. Because for an airport trip, while there might be a reduction in the amount of parking that's needed because you can Uber there, there are people that are coming to the airport from far away that an Uber just doesn't make sense. Or you need certain things in your personal vehicle. And whether that's in a personal vehicle or a fleet, there's still going to be a need for parking, but there's also going to be a need for automating that with technology and understanding how a car can get in and out of a garage without having to interact with paper or cash or these other things that will work when there's a human driver but won't work when there's an autonomous driver.
Mark, I had this Tribune story, going back to the Tribune story. I know they did like a Q&A thing with you where they talked about you being in, 1,000 garages? And don't ask you about your favorite, but I'm curious, can I ask you, I mean, and I don't want to make you pick your favorite, but what makes a garage good in your mind?
What makes a garage good is that you can see exactly where you're going to park from the street pretty easily. When you pull up, you can scan in either with your phone or a license plate. There's a lot of different aspects of what go into a great garage.
Yeah. I'm curious too. On another topic, yesterday we're seeing Grubhub grow. We're seeing Facebook launch a new building, come with a new space here. Perhaps Amazon. This is really seems like what you know. Some of us who live in Chicago have known for a while is that this is a pretty good place for startups and technology companies. What is your take on that? How do you think Chicago is doing in this area?
Well, Chicago is one of the top 10 technology ecosystems in the world. That has been in the news recently. It's been a really great ecosystem. I think Chicago is a great place to start a technology company, and it's a great place to grow one. We've been doing that. We were one of the first companies to move into 1871 and then graduated from there. We were part of Accelerate Labs, which became Techstars Chicago, and there's an entire ecosystem in Chicago for technology, and it is a great place. I think Chicago's doing unbelievable there.
We, in our first segment of the show today, we're talking a little bit about possibly Amazon locating its second headquarters here. How will that impact the status of Chicago and what you do?
Well, Amazon would be a huge addition to the technology scene in Chicago. I think it would help with the network effects of this city for technology jobs. It would certainly, change things considerably. There's a lot of companies that are moving here or having different offices and expanding. LinkedIn has a big presence here, Salesforce, Google, Facebook just announced, there's Uber, Yelp. And so it's probably not going to slow down anytime soon.
Well, Mark, we appreciate you being with us today, and all the best to everybody there at Spot Hero going forward.
Thank you very much.
All right, Mark Lawrence, who's the founder and CEO of Spot Hero, with us this morning here on The Opening Bell.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, futures are mixed toward the open on Wall Street later this morning, with NASDAQ futures lower, S&P futures lower. Dow futures, the only of the three, are higher this morning, heading to 8:30. NASDAQ futures taking it on the chin with a lot of help from Facebook. We mentioned earlier Facebook losing about 17% on its share price, and the folks over at Bloomberg have been putting the numbers on that. Yesterday, if you put all of that together, Mark Zuckerberg lost about $17 billion yesterday alone. Let's get the latest now on commodities and agriculture. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. Quite a day in the agricultural commodity trade yesterday as wheat jumped more than 36 cents a bushel, and then maybe some positive news on trade. President Trump said yesterday the United States and the European Union were kicking off talks aimed at lowering trade barriers. This was a very big day for free and fair trade, a very big day indeed, said the president. He said we are starting the negotiation right now, but we know very much where it's going. Well, going back to the market close yesterday, the weather concerns in other wheat-producing countries of the world sent the September wheat contract up 31¾ cents on the close. September corn went up 6¼ cents. August soybeans up 3¼ cents a bushel. And in the livestock trade at the Mercantile Exchange, the October lean hog contract ended up $1.32 a hundredweight. August live cattle up $1.62 a hundredweight. You have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for Thursday, July 26th. On the earnings calendar today, Amazon, American Airlines, Chipotle, McDonald's and Starbucks among the economic reports due out today. The Commerce Department has the June report on durable goods, and Freddie Mac reports on this week's weekly mortgage rates. We'll get a look at international trade in goods as well, and the Fed balance sheet coming out a little bit later on, the EIA natural gas report and the Kansas City Fed manufacturing index, all on the calendar and could move the markets on this Thursday, July 26th.